When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, welcome to Unstable Topics, a fast-paced, jam-packed, unhinged bestie podcast filled with facts, reacts, and made-up games in between.
We're your hosts, Sarah
and Maggie,
and we're excited for you to join our best friend hangout, where we surprise one another with things we find interesting or hilarious just to see how the other will react.
Our friendship might be totally stable, but you never know what your bestie might throw your way to knock you off your game.
So come shake things up, learn something new, and laugh along with us. This is Unstable Topics.
Hey, welcome to Unstable Topics, a fast-paced, jam-packed, unhinged bestie podcast filled with facts, reacts, and made-up games in between.
We're your hosts, Sarah
and Maggie,
and we're excited for you to join our best friend hangout, where we surprise one another with things we find interesting or hilarious just to see how the other will react.
Our friendship might be totally stable, but you never know what your bestie might throw your way to knock you off your game.
So come shake things up, learn something new, and laugh along with us. This is Unstable Topics.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Horror Movie Night. Right now I am sitting here with the team behind After Midnight. I'm sitting here with Christian, Jeremy, Bria, and producer David over in the corner, just sipping a beer. And we're going to talk about this movie that played last night. And
oh shit, this is a podcast.
Yeah.
Oh, dude. This isn't just for transcribing.
Yeah.
Yeah, thanks for springing that on us.
Hey, surprise. So this movie floored me, dude. It's a rom-com with a monster and somehow is super romantic, super funny, and the monster parts are genuinely terrifying. What was it like to, like,
shit,
try to jump between those three distinctly different genres for an hour and a half?
It was super easy, man. That's how I do. That's how I roll. I get that a lot, and I think that it's just kind of how I write. I feel like I'm always going to write a little bit of human drama, a little bit of romance, a little bit of comedy, a little bit of horror, because I think that's how life is. I feel like everybody thinks everything has to be in one genre all the time, and I'm like, I don't know. I wake up and I want to like die, and then I'm like, oh, Dave walked in, it made me laugh. I'm like, okay, now I'm having a good time. So I think it goes up and down. Just, you know, I think that the movie like. Kind of naturally, organically goes up and down the way I think life does. And everyone's always shocked. They're like, wow, whoa, there's a funny moment in this monster movie. And I'm like, yeah, fuck, chill out. That's a good thing. And I'm worried that people are like, it's not a horror movie because of this.
Dude, people complaining about comedy and horror is like the most unimportant opinion I've ever heard.
Yeah. Yeah. People who do that are on your team.
Because it's like, to me, I think it makes the scares better. Is it gets you relaxed and sure. You feel like, oh, okay, this is fine. And then, you know, someone shoots a shotgun and something terrifying happens.
Right, and those are two. They're also two very similar emotions, right? They're like spontaneous reactions, mm-hmm. Like a laugh or a scream, like just like, yeah. I don't understand why there needs to be a separation.
I also think you need that levity to, like, you have to build the tension, and then the laugh is like what lets you.
It's
like
a release.
It's like a permission for the audience to breathe.
Yeah, it's like an orgasm.
Sort
yeah.
of.
I don't
ever have one.
We know, Dave.
I don't think it's an accident that, like, some of the best horror films in the last couple of years have been written by comedians, with like Jordan Peele and them stepping in. You
exactly.
It takes a lot to write a punchline.
I am like Jordan Peele. You're
yes,
right.
That's what I'm trying to say.
Danny McBride.
Yeah.
That wasn't a question. You were just comparing.
This is how I get you to loosen up,
bro.
It's called compliments. So speaking of compliments, so this will sound backhanded when I don't mean it to. You really challenged the audience with a 14-minute long back and forth monologue, which you talked about a little bit during the Q&A after the movie, but you know, obviously not everybody that's listening got to be at the Q&A, so I'd like you to kind of elaborate on that story a little bit.
I was all Bria's idea.
No, that's not true. I just showed up and they told me.
We are kind of infamous for making people sit through shit. And the battery, we had a nine and a half minute
I
take.
I think it's 11 minute take.
11 minute battery. Take. So we wanted to one-up that, of course. There was always going to be this moment where Abby, who's gone, like finally comes back. And I wanted to make sure that she was able to say her piece, like just fucking say it all. And then I wanted it to be, I was very tied to this idea of wanting it to be almost just a pure acting exercise. Just two actors being able to be in the moment together. So, we even have the proscenium arch of the doorway, and then at the end, the doors close, like the curtains closing. I want it to be very theatrical, and then Bria's like, I didn't do theater. Yeah. Like, I'm used to being able to cut and, like, reset and set up, you know. And I was like, oh, no, this is going to be great. And I think you were a little scared.
And 12 takes later.
I think she was a little nervous about that, but we actually, like, we cleared the entire frame of crew. Nobody was in front of us. It was just us, and everybody just went around the other side of the entire house, and we just got to sit there and be in that moment together. And it was, I mean, it was really rewarding for me. I know after, like, take five, you had to take a fucking break.
Yeah, it's a lot. I mean, I have a lot of words to say.
All the best.
A lot of feels to feel.
A lot of feels to feel, a lot of words to say. But when I read the script, the monologue was the thing that made me, like, really, really want to do it. So when I read that, I was like, it felt so true to me and so written. I mean, I've said this multiple times, but there's not that many parts for women in their 30s and 40s, and especially not ones written where you're like a full person, where you have appealing of like feelings, jobs, you know, a full life happening. And so when I read that, I was like, oh, this is a conversation that I've had with millions of women. Millions. I don't know.
Millions.
Millions of women. They all buy this. That's an old joke. Thank you. Thanks. No, well, I've had conversations with lots of women where you are it's just the relationship conversation that you're having where you're frustrated and you're just at a certain age and you're just like, fuck this, man. Like, and that, when I read it, it felt so true to me that I really wanted to do the movie. So when we had to do it in one take, it was like, fine.
And then, but we had always, we were like, okay, we're going to get traditional coverage because they're going to want us to. But we really wish this would be in one take. And then after like take four, Dave comes over and he goes, hey, we're just going to do this all in one, right? And I was like, fuck yeah, we got him. Like, because we really thought they were going to make us do it.
Actually, I think I told you, if you don't want me to try to cut this up, don't get any coverage.
Yeah, well, that was another thing. Is if we had had other angles, they would have made us try to do it traditionally. So we just didn't give him an option. I remember, I think he said, like, Justin was like, you guys didn't get any coverage on that? Yeah. Nope, sorry.
Oops.
Now, Bree, you had memorized the monologue once before already, before that, though, right?
I did. yes.
Why?
These guys...
Things were going good, thanks.
And, so, Dave Lawson texted me and then called me at like 10 p.m. on a weeknight, which is late for me, just to let everyone know.
I was shooting that.
She was asleep for 3 hours, by the way.
Already, I know. And he was like, would you want to do this movie? Here's the script. And I read it, and I was like, oh my God, I want to do this movie. I'm so excited. And then he's like, cool, you have to audition. no one knows if you can do this. And I was like, and I was so offended. And I originally said no, I wouldn't audition. Or I kind of like tried to like tap dance around it. And eventually he was like, other people are going to audition. So if you want to be in the running for this, you have to do it. And I was like, oh. And then they sent me like normal auditions.
How are you still friends with me?
I know. I'm so how am I friends with any of you? and then they sent me like normal audition side scenes, and so I recorded those. But then I also, because the monologue had meant so much to me, I went and recorded that as well. So I learned it and just did it. They didn't ask for it, but I just did it.
Did you do it because it meant so much to you, or did you do it as a fuck you?
It was a fuck you also.
Yeah, because
it
we got.
You think I can't do this role? tell me I can't do this role, because if I can't, here it is. Like, I mean, you're going to know whether or not I can do it based on this.
Yeah, it's like you get all these audition videos, you're like, wait, why is this one 12 minutes long? Oh, she did the whole fucking thing. And I think at the end you were like,
No, I didn't. No, but
she didn't flick me out.
But I was kind of like, listen, I'm either you're going to hire me from this or you're not going to appreciate it, and then we shouldn't work together anyway.
Look, we're just the filmmakers. We didn't do that.
Yeah, we all like to push the blame on who made Bria audition.
I feel like the only way that story could be better is if it's revealed that you guys were just fucking with her and always intended to cast her. You're just like, let's see what she does. Let's
do that. I would be very angry.
No one ever said that. You were supposed to be the only one.
That better not be true, and if it is, I'm even angrier.
Hey, we're motivating you.
That's what I need, is more motivation.
We're pushing you outside your comfort zone.
We did reveal earlier that, this was funny though, no, people did audition, but it was funny because we were saying in the last interview that we, Christian and I, had to do a video to pitch Henry to be in the movie, and she's like, you fucking auditioned for Henry to give him a role?
I didn't mean audition. I was like, I'm sorry, Henry Zebrowski, I feel like I was on Heroes like 5 years before you were. I've been doing this shit way longer than you.
That's like,
I know, I'm texting Henry the moment we get out of here.
That's also like you like singing Lisa Loeb's song for Lisa Loeb. Like you're auditioning for Lisa Loeb.
No, that's fair though. I get both.
Oh, Lisa so Loeb. There are shades.
Listen, it goes Lisa Loeb, Bria Grant, Henry Zebrowski.
There's a big jump.
There's no one else.
I'm sorry, Henry.
Now, Christian, you shot the movie. There's some really, really cool moments. I don't want to spoil because I want people to actually go and see the movie, but I'll just say the shotgun sequence at night is probably one of my favorite things I've seen in any movie in the last couple of years.
Awesome. That was, well, I mean, that was in the script, and sure. I read it, and went, how the heck do you shoot that? Like, I didn't know how to shoot that, and then I was like, you know what? The easiest thing to do is we just shot it with light. And then put it in post, like, you know, we put a frame of it.
Yeah.
So it just flashes when he shoots the shotgun. But that was actually.
And we had to shoot the running in reverse, remember?
Oh yeah, well that was other shit. That was just because we didn't have enough. We didn't.
Yeah, it did feel complicated because I always wanted there to be a scene in the script where like it was lit by shotgun blasts and it was. It would fade out, and then Chris was like, how are we going to do that? And then it was like, oh, we'll just crank up a light, leave the light on the whole time, and then we'll just darken it later, and then just give it a frame.
Yeah. And yeah. I don't think anybody knew what we were fucking doing, though.
I don't think. They were like, what the fuck we're doing?
Because I was like, shit.
I have nothing.
So the script does follow a very non-linear storytelling. When you were crafting this, did you kind of have the timeline already figured out? Or as you were writing it, were you kind of figuring out what happened in the past and the future simultaneously?
I never know what the fuck's going on in writing. Like, that's like a blind journey. I have no idea where I'm going. But all I knew was that Abby was gone and Abby was going to come back at some point. And I had to connect those two things. I usually, like, I'm very bad at plotting, but I always have one thing I'm going four. And so I knew that she was gone. I knew she'd come back, and I was like, "Where are we going to meet here?" And I started to knit those things together. And I always knew that I wanted to make sure that because she was gone, I didn't want to vilify her. I wanted to be able to see her, you know, when things were good. So the flashback things were always a part of it. The birthday party flashbacks were always in there, but we were able to move them around in post to actually kind of drop them where we wanted to. That was a nice, they were a nice non-linear thing where we could pop them in here or there and it didn't matter. I think like some of them were like not in the spaces they were in the script, but that structure was always there.
Well, and it really helps make every one of these characters feel human because they're not perfect. Every person in this movie is flawed in some way.
I'm not.
Oh, you are definitely flawed some way, sir.
Of course, a lot of ways.
Well, I mean, I know everyone's flawed.
I appreciate that there's even, you know, Abby's big concern is that your eyes have been gazing off to other people. And there's a scene that in the movie, if you're not really paying attention, just feels like a weird moment. But for me, I'm like, oh my God, he's going to cheat on her.
Yeah. And that was a long, that was much worse
in the script. Yeah.
In the script, he gives her a ride home. that was right at the breaking point, and that was right up against the, you know, him at his lowest, and I, you know, that was, that was the suggestion that he was
thinking about it.
He was at the point where he's like, you know, he's at his wit's end. This thing is attacking. Nobody believes him. Abby won't call him back. He doesn't know why she left. And he's like, there's this temptation. And it's like, he might, you know, this might be that moment. But cooler heads prevailed.
It's a bigger moment in the script, too. No one's talked about that.
Yeah, no one does. Yeah, it's a much bigger moment. And it's a much longer scene. Like it goes to it's never go to a second location.
No,
it goes to a second location.
Yeah,
yeah, but no. It's the whole thing was to put people people are having a fucking crisis in their relationship, but neither of them are villains. One of them's selfish, and the other one is finally taking back her agency.
And I have one. This is a little bit of an inside baseball question, but it really blew my mind when I was watching it. Here we go. How did you get the okay for Jennifer Help Us, which is such a phenomenal movie that I feel like most people don't know.
Wait, what? Are you serious? Jennifer Help Us, like on the TV?
Yeah.
That Juan is
Juan worked.
Juan, the director, was.
He's one of our best friends. He worked on the movie every day on the set.
Yeah,
he cut his arm. We have tattoos right here where because Juan slashed his arm open. Painting the house in After Midnight.
That's awesome. Producer Brian Berger is on our show on a pretty regular basis because we love that movie so much.
Oh, so that's so crazy.
When I saw that, I'm like, that's the mask from Jennifer Help Us. What the fuck is that thing?
Yeah, we needed the weirdest question I've ever
We needed something free to put on the TV.
We're like, Juan, how did we get it? It was like the only thing that was free. Like, Juan, give us your movie.
We could have put Spring on there.
No, we couldn't. I
did the cinematography for his new movie, Fingers, as well. Juan's new movie.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So, yeah.
No, Juan is the best person. He's the sweetest man alive. Yeah. Him and Chris Dortch are like, they work. Chris Dortch runs the CFF, Chattanooga Film Festival, and Juan were like, hey, take off the doors on that house. Hey, paint everything in here. Hey, get all the bugs out. And they're just like, we got it. Don't worry about it. We're on it.
Hey, impale your arm on some glass. Yeah, okay.
Slash yourself I'm on open. It.
We did not tell him to do that. Oh, yeah. It's his own volition.
No, Juan cut his arm very badly while he was painting inside. And he was like, guys, can you get a towel? And I'm like, oh, Juan fucking kicked over some paint. And he's like, comes out and he's just gushing blood. And I was like, oh, that's a hospital. And Dave's on the phone and he goes, let me see. And he looks and goes, all right, get in the car. So he takes him down to the clinic. And because Juan cut his right arm, he couldn't fill out the thing. So Juan is a Puerto Rican man. He's sitting there covered in paint, bleeding. And Dave is asking him all of his information. And he's like, it looks like I hired someone from like a Home Depot to paint my house. And he cut himself. And I had to bring him down here.
So for people who are listening who want to see what literally blood, sweat, and tears went into with this movie, where else is it playing in the near future so they can set the schedule?
I don't know, Dave, where's it playing?
No idea. I had to look at the spreadsheet.
It's playing in Maryland in the beginning of October.
It's playing in Knoxville, a couple weeks.
Knoxville Horror Film Festival.
It's playing at a lot of festivals.
Frightening ass film festival in Chattanooga.
And then it will be released first quarter of next year.
Okay. And is there a website where people can find a lot of that information?
There should be. No, but follow us on Twitter. Facebook.
Yeah, I think it's After Midnight Film.
I saw it. I was impressed. I was like, wow, they put up an Instagram and it has like two photos. I was like, good for them.
Bria found it. Yeah.
If Bria can find it on the internet, your listeners will definitely be able to find it.
All right, we're tired.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you, brother. Pleasure.
Hey, welcome to Unstable Topics, a fast-paced, jam-packed, unhinged bestie podcast filled with facts, reacts, and made-up games in between.
We're your hosts, Sarah
and Maggie,
and we're excited for you to join our best friend hangout, where we surprise one another with things we find interesting or hilarious just to see how the other will react.
Our friendship might be totally stable, but you never know what your bestie might throw your way to knock you off your game.
So come shake things up, learn something new, and laugh along with us. This is Unstable Topics.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.